This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, my guest is going to be M.A. Lawson, the author of the Kay Hamilton series. But first, I want to welcome back to Joy on Paper one of my favorite writers, Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, Margaret Maron. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Patsy. Good to be back with you.
Well, I'm so happy to have you back, and you are back by popular demand of my listeners, because I had so many, many listeners who, of course, when your last Deborah Knott book came out, people were...
And I said that it was going to be my last Deborah Knott book.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it was the last or if it just wound up and tied up a lot of the story that people had been reading and interested over the years. And you are really one of the favorite writers of everybody who loves a good mystery. And now I know that in June you're coming out with a new NYPD detective, one of your NYPD detective series of Sigrid Harold, right?
Yes, yes.
And
Takeout will be out in June.
That's hard to say. So I was going to Takeout will be released in June.
And there you go.
It's going to be another one of these wonderful. I love Of course, everybody loves the Deborah Knott series. I mean, it's just a classic of now for every mystery reader. It is one of the series that is a must read. And now people didn't know as much about the Sigrid Harold series, which yes. I thought was delightful right from the beginning.
Well, she is the opposite of Deborah Knott, whereas Deborah is warm and funny and surrounded by a lot of friends and relatives. Sigrid Harold is urban and pretty much a loner. But I thought of her as having a streak of humor in the books. But some of the readers took her at face value and thought that she was humorless, and so they just did not warm up to her the way they did to the Deborah books. But still, there were enough people who liked her and wanted to know more about her that when I thought I had finished with her in the last book, which was Fugitive Colors, and I decided that, no, there was a little bit more that I had not, some more loose ends that had not been tied up. And so... that's why I wrote Takeout.
Okay, well, I think this book came out of that period of time when you lived in New York for several years.
Yes.
Which was, so you were out of place in New York City with your lovely Southern accent.
a Southern accent can be rather useful in New York at times. If people don't think that it automatically means that you're slightly stupid... It does, they can be charmed by it.
Well, it's a certain panache, I think,
Yes.
Makes you...
It talked me out of a parking ticket once.
That's nice. Now, that is useful. That's a great thing to know. Fantastic. So at that time, when you came out with this idea, you were in New York, and you mm-hmm. thought about an NYP detective. Well, tell us a little bit about her so that we can...
Well, as I say, she is a loner. When people think of Deborah as the positive, it's absolutely the opposite. Deborah is actually Sigrid's opposite and the negative to whatever was positive about Sigrid. So Sigrid is an only child. She is the daughter of a police officer, detective, who was killed in the line of duty. Her mother is a Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist. And I gave her a Southern grandmother. I don't know why. I just did. It just seemed like the thing to do.
And well, for you, that's rather natural.
Yeah, right. And I didn't know. I mean, her mother was Southern and played the Southern charmer when she wanted to, when she needed to. So I said, oh, well, what the heck, I'll just give her a Southern give her that background. I don't know that she'll ever need it. In fact, I used it to make fun of her because she does not consider herself attractive, that her neck is too long, her eyes are too wide, her mouth is too wide, and she doesn't fit into the Southern belle mold that her mother was brought up in. And I thought that would be, fun to have her dressed in beige and black all the time and have this grandmother who's always prodding her to wear color and to be more feminine and to tell her that, you don't really have to be beautiful. If you think you're beautiful, then the world will agree that you are. And keeps trying to prod her into a more feminine mold, and she just does not fit. She really is the square peg for the round mold. So she's a loner, as I said. She doesn't have any close kin other than her mother and the grandmother. But she's extremely competent in her work, and she seems to be all business at work, which means that her colleagues and her underlings are slightly intimidated by her. And I had a lot of fun exploring her over 9 books, and now this is the 10th and final one in that series.
Well, I think, I always liked her. I there was something about her that, well, perhaps because she wasn't the beautiful, one, which is, sort of stereotypical,
sexy.
Yes. she has to use her brains, and she does.
Yeah, right.
So now, is it after the Deborah Knott big finale?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, you took a little breather?
Yes, I did.
You had to.
And this, it was fun to go back. There's some things I had forgotten. And although now that the books have been put online as e-books, and also Oconee Spirit Press put them out as trade paperbacks. So I had to go back through them and read them, and that's when I realized that I had left a few loose ends. And I thought, well, let's find out what happened. And this book gave me a chance to do that.
Well, that's exciting, and I'm looking forward to having you back in June, so we just remind people. But I want to tell everyone that the it is so wonderful that on the internet, everybody can start the series at the beginning and just have that absolute joy of seeing the development. And
I do think the books stand alone.
You can
plunge in anywhere, but I do think that there is a richer feel to them because there is an overarching mystery in the first 8 books as to how her father actually was killed, and actually there's a link to that in this last book, a further comment on that, and you find out what happened and what the thing is with her boss, Captain McKinnon, and what it is with her mother, and you can read each book individually, but if you read them in order, you get a little bit more of that unraveling of the relationships as you go.
Well, I agree. I agree. That's why I'm telling my listeners. That's why I wanted to talk to you early, so I could tell my listeners, go get those books. Start reading, and then by June, because actually, your books are hard to put down.
Oh, thank you.
So, By June, they'll be through these first books, and they'll be ready for the new release and hot off the press kind of thing.
And if they go to my website, there is a listing of the books in chronological order and a printable list, and they can print off the list if they want to. and figure out which book came first and which came last.
Well, it's like the Deborah Knott series that really, it starts, now, of course, the exact opposite. Deborah Knott has so many relatives. I mean, it starts off with of course, Sue Stevenson marrying Kezie Knott, and yeah, with eight small sons. And yeah, that entire, throughout the series, there were 19, 20 books? How many? 20?
There are 20 Deborah Knott books.
20 Deborah Knott books. So you go through all of these books, and that theme is carried. I mean, you know always that there were these eight small sons, and you always wonder, why did Sue, who was coming from a rich family, marry Kezie, who was not?
Yeah, right. He's just a dirt farmer and a bootlegger to boot.
Exactly, but it's woven through all of those books, and you don't know until you get to the end. So that's why I think again with that series, everyone should start at the beginning and just have fun. It's just you could take.
Well, it is fun. I think, as I told you last time, Deborah has 11 older brothers, as it turns out, because Sue and Kezie had a couple of sons.
They didn't have enough.
Yeah, like they didn't have enough. The boys used to tease the father that he was trying for a complete ball team, baseball team.
Exactly.
Nine with the relief, with the relief pitchers.
You got it.
And as I think I told you last time, if I had really been thinking this thing through, I would not have given her more than five brothers, because there are some of the brothers that I've barely mentioned. I mean, we talk about them being out on the West Coast or being in the Navy or being somewhere else, not in the county. And people have asked me, well, what about this brother? And what about that brother? What's he up to? How come she doesn't go out to visit the ones in California and have an adventure out there? But, there's only so much you can do in one lifetime. So if I'd given her five brothers instead of 11, it would have been more manageable.
Well, it was so funny. Last week, I think it was last week, I had on a guest, Carol J. Perry, and she's writing a series called Witch City Mysteries. And she's only been, getting noticed in the past few years. And she is such a delightful person. And she was telling me that one of her inspirations was... Several people have really inspired her, one being, of course, Carolyn Hart, a great inspiration. And like Carolyn Hart, she has a cat in her books. And so there's that the love of cats,
yeah,
and yours. And so when she was asked to speak at a Sleuth Fest that's coming up here, Mystery Writer of America Sleuth Fest in Boca Raton in February, she decided to take your book, the Deborah Knott book.
Oh my goodness!
And to use your books as her talking point there, and so she's really excited.
I'm really flattered.
The development of Deborah Knott and her, everyone around her is just so fantastic, and I'm sure she's a subject of many panel talks. But I was very happy that Carol Perry picked you, and she's a marvelous.
I don't know her books, but I'm certainly going to go and look for them now.
Well, you have to. They're called Witch City Mysteries. Absolutely delightful. She was born on Halloween in Salem, and she never used this idea for years. I mean, it just came upon her a few years ago, and she decided to start writing. And they are absolutely delightful books. Just really wonderful mysteries, and you will love them.
Do they have a touch of the supernatural?
Just a touch, just in that cat. That cat has a little bit of something going on in him, and he's called Orion, and so that's a really great name for a cat
for
in Salem, Mass.
Cat.
Yeah, so it's just the basic is really a mystery, but a little bit of fun in there. So you will enjoy them absolutely.
Oh,
and As a matter of fact, Carolyn Hart gave her a blurb. So, you know, that was really sweet of her. Well, I mean, that's one of the wonderful things about writers who are
just... It is a sorority. I mean, the women writers that I know are usually very supportive of each other.
And I know you have been, because you were, you've been the president of, what, the American Crime Writers League, Mystery Writer of America, and Sisters in Crime.
Yes, yes.
So...
It's been quite a ride.
Well, I think Sisters in Crime is particularly nice because, as you said, it the women helping and supporting other women. Now, have you been involved in, are you involved sometimes in the selection of winners for contests and things like that? Do you do that?
I haven't done that lately. I have in the past, yes. I have read for the Edgar Committee, various Edgar Committees. And, you know, I have to say, I think the Edgar Awards are probably the most objective and fairly judged. Some of the others can become popularity contests, but with the Mystery Writers of America, what happens is they have a committee, and the committee reads, or at least looks at, every single eligible mystery that was published in that year. And the year that I did the best novel, I think we got something like 400 to 500 books in that.
Wow.
Now, naturally, you can read the first chapter and then go back, skim through some of the others, and you can tell pretty quickly whether or not the book is prize-worthy. But still, at least half of those, at least 250 of them could have been, you know, nominated. And out of that, you whittle it down, and you list your top 10 choices, and the whole committee does that. And then everybody makes sure that they have read everybody else's top 10 choices. And it is amazing how quickly it winnows out. And you wind up voting at the end on, you know, which ones you want to give the awards and the nominations to. So it's not just, you know, your friends reading your books and or people who like you or like your books voting on it. It really is a jury of your peers. And we try to make the committees reflect both gender and geometry, geography and genre as to whether or not it's hard-boiled or thriller or cozy. And the committee members reflect these various parts. Because for years, it was only the men that were getting the awards. And once we women had a voice and a seat at the table, we made sure that it wasn't just thrillers, but cozies and traditional mysteries that were really being considered seriously, too.
Well, I think it's wonderful the support that writers give to each other, and it's an important element in the life of a writer to be recognized by the writers that they admire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been very fortunate that way.
Now, tell me something. I was wondering, now, of course, it's always, when they write about you, they always say that you live on your family farm, which is 100 years old.
Yes.
Do you live in the same house? Is it the actual house there?
The house that was here, my grandparents' house, burned in the 50s.
Oh.
So this part of the land sat empty for several years until my husband and I built a new house on the same, not on the exact same spot, because the house, we thought that the original spot, the house was too close to the road. So we're back from the road a little ways. But it's still, I have the bushes and the trees that my grandmother planted and that my great aunt planted. I have a rose bush, Patsy. Let me quickly tell you the story of the rose bush. My great aunt, my grandfather's sister, spinster sister, never married, but she had the greenest thumbs going. She was illiterate, but she cooked by instinct, and she was a fabulous cook, they tell me. But her big thing was her plants, and she could make anything grow. And she was at church one Sunday when they had all-day services on the grounds and everything. And one of the women was wearing a sprig of a multifloral rose, several little roses in a cluster, the way they grew. And she was a teenager, and she loved it. She thought that was the prettiest little cluster of roses she had ever seen. And she sort of followed the woman around. And at the end of the day, the woman said, "Well, Sue, since you like this so much, I'm going to let you have it." And it had been pinned to the woman's lapel all day long. Sue brought that rose home and rooted it. And I still have the rose bush growing in my flower garden.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful story.
Wonderful.
Well, you know, I just want to thank you again for being on today. And I want everyone to go to your website, which is margaretmarin.com.
Yes.
And they can find your the list of your books, and they can start reading and getting ready for June when you're going to come back on.
Okay.
Again, thank you so very, very much for joining me today. Yes. Margaret Marin, I think you are a fantastic author, and I'm just so proud that you've been a guest.
Well, thank you, Patsy. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care now.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. I think, you know, I'm just going to go straight... I'll go straight into the next interview because it's very exciting for me. I have a wonderful guest. I can call him Mike. I'm going to call him Mike. I know it. Okay. Let's just go straight to Mike.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. Okay. I have to tell everybody, of course, that you are M.A. Lawson. And everybody should be thinking about that when they are looking for your new book, which I'm holding up to the camera here because we're also on the internet. And it is it is a fantastic book, K Street. Talk about nail-biting openings and exciting openings. You did it with this book.
Well, I was trying for that. You know, I wanted to start off with the action sequence and then get into the background, a chapter or so later. That was the intent, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, boy. Did you do that? Actually, you owe me a half dozen eggs because, no, here's what happened. I put the eggs to boil. I was making hard-boiled eggs, and I put the eggs on the stove, and I went to the other room, and I started reading this. Oh, and I'm reading, and I'm reading, and I can't stop. I mean, I when people read this book, they'll understand this opening sequence is so much fun because it just bang, bang, bang. And, of course, the wonderful thing about it, this is your main character, Kay Hamilton. And let's just put it, she's an unusual character, and she is quick on the draw.
Yes.
And boy, it just went from one thing, and by the time I got past that and down to the slower part, I realized I just had made a big mess. I could smell the smell of burnt hard boiled eggs. But it was worth it because I always love when I like the action in the beginning. You know, sometimes it's okay to sort of draw it out and get introduce the character and stuff. But boy, you just hit it right on, right. And that's Kay Hamilton.
Well, I always think of the James Bond movies. They always start off with, James jumping out of a plane without a parachute. Then the next scene is he goes and meets M, and you find out what he's really going to go do next. And I always kind of like that beginning.
Yeah, I do too. I like it. And it's funny, one of the things, of course, I noticed your publicist is very, very clever and very, very intelligent and keeps in all of the publicity things they say, a book with cinema. And I thought, yeah, they're right. And of course, I happen to know that you got this idea because somebody said that, now, of course, you're famous as Mike Lawson. And not M.A. Lawson, for your absolutely fantastic, your other series, the Joe DiMarco series. And in that series, you have a character named Emma, who who right. everybody, I mean, everybody who reads the DeMarco series loves Emma and always wants her in the books. And I think on the last book, you didn't have her enough and everybody was complaining.
Yeah, and I've had a bunch of people email me about that because the last couple of books, because of the plots, I couldn't really work her in. And so,
I know, but
I've had some complaints about that.
Oh, yeah. People get, I mean, they say, well, we want Emma. We want Emma. And so now you took this idea and you ran with Kay Hamilton and wow. Fantastic.
It was fun to do.
Particularly, you know, being successful and already having a great series that you're able to sort of step knowing what it means to write a series, to step into it and start the series from the beginning. Is it easier now that you can sort of you've thought some of the plots out in advance so that it's easier?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, it didn't really work that way. With Rosarito Beach, you know, the idea actually came from a discussion I had with the television producer. He was looking for maybe collaborating on a thriller with a female protagonist, and I wrote a screenplay for that. Now, the screenplay, without going into all the details, came basically the novel Rosarito Beach, which was optioned for television. But I hadn't expected to write a series. I wrote it originally just as a standalone, and then I was lucky enough in that Penguin Blue Rider, wanted it as a series. And so when I got to the second book, I had to kind of figure out, wow, now where am I going from here? Because I hadn't really thought about it. That's one problem with writing a series. If you're not thinking ahead, you know, you can build in traps for yourself in terms of the characters. You know, you lock them into a certain job or profession or a skill set. And so with the second book, it was kind of figuring, this is a series now. Where do I go next? A little bit winging it from that point.
Well, Kay Hamilton gives you a lot of options here because she's a really strong character.
Well, and I ended K Street in such a fashion that I've got a lot of different directions to go in. I did do that intentionally because it gives me options for whatever the next step might be.
Well, I one of the reasons I think K Street is just right on. Of course, it's just it's timely and it's you really bring out the Washington side of your background, and it's a believable story.
Well, I think so. One of the other interviewers asking me about, what do you think is the likelihood of having some off-the-books agency working for the government? I said, well, I think it's pretty likely. I mean, you go all the way back to the plumbers in the Watergate era, where you had this group out there running around doing things for Nixon at the time, and the military these days used a lot of private contractors for various things. And, so the likelihood you could use one to go off and do something that you didn't want attributed to the government, I think, is probably possible. I don't know if it happens or not, but it might happen.
Well, I think it sounds very reasonable to me. Actually, with everything going on in this world, nothing would surprise us anymore. Correct?
Oh, that's for sure.
That's for sure. And now, of course, writing a woman's. I don't know. It's not a woman's point of view. Your character doesn't write. She's just tough. I mean, from a tough point of view, I think you just wrote her.
I wasn't really thinking of it so much as a woman's point of view. As I was just thinking of as a character who has a certain personality. Just like all women have different personalities, as do men. I mean, this woman's personality was such that she's bright and she's brave and she's extremely driven. And at the same time, she can be, she doesn't play well with others. She doesn't have that much respect for authority. And so I was really just looking at a set of personality traits to for this particular character. And one of those, for example, that comes out in Rosarito Beach, I mean, she's a mother, but she's a lousy mother. I mean, she's not that maternal. And so me trying to create a character that was, would fit the kind of missions I give her in the book, if you will.
Well, I think she resonates with people. I can see why it's becoming really a very popular series, because now if I say Kay Hamilton, people know who I'm talking about. You know,
well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, it is. And the minute I was talking to somebody, like a month or so ago when I got the book, and I said, well, I'm reading the third book in the Kay Hamilton series. Oh, Kay Hamilton. I love Kay Hamilton. And, you know, so you've really managed to create a character that is memorable. And, well, as your publicist says, cinematic. Because we live, you know, that's a, on the one hand, it's people say, well, why do you always ask writers if their books are going to be made into movies? And I say, because what happens if your book is made into movies? You're selling more books. You know, that's,
well, yeah, of course.
So that's the whole reason. It's not so much, I mean, it's nice to have your books made into movies because you have a movie, but it also is nice because then you can sell more books. And
well, the other thing I think the movie guys do, because there are a lot of them are very bright, I think they can take your book and even actually improve on the book. You know, I can think of several books where I've read the book, it was a very good book, then you saw the movie, and they really, you know, they really brought something, you know, additional to the thing with the, you know, the way they can, you know, set scenes and the characters, and you can give him background without a whole lot of dialogue and things like that.
Oh, well, that's nice. As a script writer, I'm so glad you can say that, because so many times writers absolutely hate what the script writer does with their book and occasionally threaten to kill the script writer.
When I was trying to, you know, understand better how to write a screenplay, I bought the screenplay for The Departed, which won the Academy Award that year. And I read the screenplay, then I watched the movie as I was looking at the screenplay, and it's unbelievable what the actor can bring to the story. I mean, it's just, I was just so impressed just watching, you know, a simple line in the script, and, you know, the dimension that the actor would bring to it by the way he would deliver the line. To me, it was just fascinating when you're, you know, actually reading the screenplay and watching the movie at the same time.
Well, it is a fun process, and I have a feeling, simply from the fact that people recognize the name. When I talk to, you know, readers, people, I try to talk to as many people about what books are they reading, what, you know, I've always trying to find what authors they want me to interview and what, you know, they're interested in. And so that always impresses me when a reader immediately hones in on a name and remembers the details of that character. And you've done that.
I'll tell you the truth with the series I've written, because this is my 14th book, sometimes the readers will remember things that I didn't remember.
Oh, that's true. Well, I've done that to Mary Higgins Clark. Poor Mary Higgins Clark. I had her on. Well, I've had her on a couple of times, and I know her books, I think, better than she does. You know, she's written 54, 55 books now. And so I'll say, you know, in that book, your character did that. And she said, did I write that? I said, yes,
yeah,
you
I
did.
Had the exact same experience. The guy emailed me one day and said, well, Joe did this thing. And he was, I don't know, he had some sort of question about what he did. And I said, geez, I didn't even remember writing that. I had to go find the book and flip through it.
Well, it's wonderful when you get loyal readers, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no, it's fun. You know, most emails you get are usually very complimentary. They say how much they enjoyed the book or the story or something. But every once in a while, you get one from somebody who doesn't like the book, and those are actually kind of funny sometimes. But
oh, and the ones who manage to find, well, there's two types of writers. The ones who find all the typos and misspellings and forgotten commas. Those are funny. And
well, the favorite one I had was the guy on my, he wrote me, he said, it is almost like, he said, I hate this book. I just hate everything about this book. I'm on page 286. Now, this was a book that was only 300 pages long. I almost emailed the guy back and said, well, geez, stop reading before you have a stroke. The fact that he hated the book and read all of it anyway amazed me.
Well, readers can be funny, and you know, and I know that they enjoy meeting their favorite writers. Do you like to do road tours? Are you doing a road tour for this book?
Well, I'm doing a whole bunch of signings in the area where I live, around Seattle, and I always enjoy meeting the folks that, they're enthused about the book and they want to talk about it, and for me it's a lot of fun to talk to them and just to get their perception. Sometimes you'll find a reader has a perception of the book that you hadn't really even intended, which is also interesting.
Well, it's one selfie with a reader can really pay off, because I was at a romance writers conference, and one of the writers was telling me that from one selfie that one of her fans came to the meeting and got a selfie. She sent it out to her friends, and she just happened to have like 180 friends. And those 180 friends sent it out to another, and these are very friendly people. So they sent it out. And by the end, she had like 10,000 people who had all seen this selfie of this woman with her. And
that is pretty amazing. That does happen these days.
Oh yeah, it does. So get I'm telling authors now, get selfies with these people, because you don't know who's got a lot of friends out there, and it can really, just roll over like a snowball, and before you know it, a couple thousand people have heard about you simply because of a selfie, which is something that never happened before.
Well, I never turn down an invitation when somebody wants their picture taken with me. I'm always very flattered by it.
Well, good. And just do it more and say, oh, yes, I'm really smiling here, and send it out to all your friends and tell your friends to send. And because that is, nowadays, of course, writers have to get out there and promote the books.
Yep.
And that's one of the joys and pitfalls of being a writer. Now, I assume from your writing, simply because I find as I am reading your books, I'm enjoying it so much. You must really enjoy writing.
I do. I've heard some writers talk. They make it sound like it's agony.
Yeah,
they're just torturing themselves as they're writing the book. I don't feel that way at all. I enjoy it. I mean, I particularly enjoy you come up with the idea of the story and you invent the characters and. For me, it's the writing is fun, and I write every day, and I get up early and write, and so I do enjoy it, and hopefully that does come across in the books. That for me it is fun to do it.
Well, I think it does come through your books, because I can tell sometimes. Well, I read a lot, as you can imagine. I get like 10 books a week from publishers, and they ask me, they always say, will you pick the ones you want to interview? And I start with that first chapter. And if it doesn't grab me, I just don't bother to interview them, because, this is my program. So
Well, right. Plus it's your time. If you're not, captured immediately by the book, you're not going to slog your way through, 300 or 400 pages. It shouldn't be an effort on the part of the reader either.
Exactly. Well, so many interview programs, I mean, they interview everybody, whether they read the book or like the book or don't like the book, and simply because it's part of the program. But because Joy on Paper is all mine, as a matter of fact, one listener said to me, well, you always like all the books. Why aren't you ever really critical? And I said, well, because it's my program. I don't have to read the garbage I don't want.
Well, there's another thing. In fact, I was talking to the critic for the Seattle Times just the other day, and in his reviews he does for the Seattle Times, he's always positive. And I told him, well, I think that's good, because I don't read his column to learn about the books that he hates. I'm always looking for something good to read. So I'm more interested in seeing, a positive review, or a positive interview. Somebody says they like a book, because that gives me an idea for the next book to go get. I mean, some interviewers and some critics like to be kind of snarky about the books.
Oh yeah,
they're not really doing a service, to the readers out there looking for for a good book to read.
Well, Patea, I was reading recently some British reviewers. They are nasty. I mean, they can be down vicious, vicious people. I thought, what is wrong with you people? But, gee whiz, I really hate that. So as I said, when I read the first chapter of K Street, oh, well, my hard-boiled eggs tell the story of that one. Yeah. You know, it's just, wow. It's I have to, when I talking to writers groups, they always ask me, well, you know, how do you decide on the books? And I say, well, usually, you know, I can tell by the first page if I continue to and read the whole chapter, and I'm hooked. That's it. I know it's a great book. And so you've done a wonderful job with K Street.
Yeah, when you're talking to new writers, I talk to them quite often, and the advice I always give them is that, you know, that first chapter has to catch somebody, because, you know, people like agents and publishers and readers they're impatient, and if they're not captured immediately, they're going to move on. And so you have to put a lot of effort into that, you know, that, you know, the first sentence and the first paragraph of that book.
Well, you know, of course, you had been writing quite a few years before you found an agent.
I was, yeah, I was. I had, you know, three or four different agents out there during about a 10-year period, but when I finally found my first agent, I mean, the agent I have today, and he sold the first two books almost immediately. But the same story for a lot of writers. You know, it takes a while to find the right agent and the right publisher, and I've been just very fortunate.
Well, because you're very talented, and so it works. It all works together. And as I said, I have a feeling that I will see you in the movies, probably.
Well, let's hope so.
You know, I have a feeling. Well, I can tell you, if any producer reads this first chapter of K Street, it's right there. If I had money and I was picking up projects, I would option this book in a minute, because I just want to do that first scene. It's just,
yeah, the first scene was a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It was a joy to have you on Joy on Paper.
Well, I appreciate talking to you, and the best of luck with the screenplays and the work you're doing, too.
Okay, well, I just want also to tell people, what is your webpage?
Okay, it's MikeLawsonBooks.com, and if you go there, you can get the, you know, the background on me and on all the and the 14 novels I've written. And K Street's available, you know, in the usual places, with, you know, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and the mystery bookstores.
And K Street is by M.A. Lawson. Are we going to call you Ma? And so it's just really, it's been thrilling to talk to you.
Well, you too, and I appreciate it very much, and thank you.
Okay, well, I will have you back. Have you back when the next? Are you probably finished the next book already? Have you?
It's the publisher right now. I'm just waiting to hear back on that one. Yes. So the next one is done, but still have to go through the editing process.
Okay. Well, I'll have you back on when the next book comes out. And meanwhile, I'm hoping that some producer in Hollywood over there will just pick this up, because I think it's fantastic.
Well, like they say, from your lips to God's ears.
Absolutely. And I will be at the premiere, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Take care now.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then I'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back. And I wanted to just remind everyone that Angela Hunt's Write a Great Book workshop is coming up on February 11th through the 12th. It is going to be just a fantastic event. It's Angela is a writer who is local to our area. She has written over 100 books, including the novelization of Risen, the hit movie, and she will be teaching an intensive, interactive two-day course designed to help you publish the novel or nonfiction book that you've always dreamed of writing. So she's lots of fun. She's an absolutely delightful person, and with a lot of humor and clear instructions, she will guide you from the big picture considerations to the tiny details that will help your work stand out. And you'll learn so much from her. One of the things that she will be talking about is plot skeleton, how to plot your novel or your life story, and how to get it all down on paper and create unforgettable characters and to evoke emotions in the reader, and how to edit your own work so that it's ready to be read. She's also going to be sharing with you her, she has a workbook that is really a detailed analysis of how to write a book. It's called Writing Lessons from the Front. It's a $75 value, and you will be working with her through this book. It has blank pages where you go in and you fill in pages, and it's very interesting. And she's also going to discuss the different type of genres, books for children, young adult, and just go over the entire process of how to approach your book that you have to know for whom you are writing. Are you writing a book that's for young adult? Are you writing a book that is for middle grade? Or a children's book, or whatever it is, the type of book that you're going to be writing. So she really is a woman who knows her business. She's been so successful, and her workshop is available. You can find it at writeagreatbook.info. And she also has a wonderful website, angelahunt.com, where you can see the list of all of her books. And it's well worth going there. It's well worth attending this fantastic workshop right here, right in town. And it's 2 days. It goes from, I think, from 9 to 4 every day. Lunch is included. Workbooks and all sorts of other goodies are available. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So I suggest that you go to writeagreatbook.info and find out more and sign up for that. And then I also want to thank one of my listeners and also one of my favorite local authors, Rita Moreau. I love her books. Feisty Nuns, her most recent book is just absolutely fantastic, and it is available on Amazon, and you should go there. But she brought to my attention a website called hometownreads.com. If you are a reader, it's a great place to go to find out local writers and to discover new writers that you might want to read. And then for writers, it's a wonderful location for you to go and put your book up for people to find. And this is an effort that's been done, and the creator, whose name is Becky, I've invited her to be on Joy on Paper, and I hope that within the next few weeks she's going to join us, and she will tell us more about Hometown Reads, how it works, and what you have to do, and how you can help promote local authors, which, of course, we do at the Book Nook, Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. And you should just take yourself over there and find a good book. And also in the evenings at Miami Avenue, they have fantastic music. Today is Tuesday, and they have karaoke night. It is such a wonderful event. So if you're in the mood to get out of the house, and we all are, we've had enough politics, we need a little break. Everybody get out there to Miami Avenue Wine Bar, Music and the Arts, and start singing up a storm. It's going to be lots of fun. Meanwhile, I want to remind you, everyone, also that I have on my website, well, I will have tomorrow, the interview I had with Amor Towles about his wonderful book, A Gentleman in Moscow. And also the narrator of the book, Nicholas Guy Smith, actually read a portion of the book, and it is going to be on my archive page. And that's at www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And go to the archive page, and you'll be able to listen to this fantastic interview I had with Amor Towles and the narrator. It's a marvelous book. If you haven't read A Gentleman in Moscow, you must get it. It's the book of the year of 2016. Okay, and be here on Thursday because my guest is Barbara Powell from the Irene Goodman Literary Agency, and she's going to tell us a lot of stuff about how to get your book published. So, look forward to seeing you on Tuesday. Remember, meanwhile, share your joy and just have a wonderful day. And go to karaoke tonight with a song in your heart. Bye for now.